This is the Real BS Show. Time for another weekly edition.
Weekly edition.
Yeah. Seth, you over there?
I'm over here. I'm here and I'm there.
Got the bells on?
The bells are on. That way we don't get lost.
Yeah. Before we get started, I wanted to mention that a frequent listener sent me a warning, said shouldn't talk so personally about my living conditions and my just my whole overall operation.
Right.
So I just want to say thank you to that listener. Number one, for listening to the show, but number two, thank you for the warning.
Hey, what's your social security number? I'm kidding.
I don't even know. It's my tax ID number, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Google knows. Ask Google.
Yeah.
But thank you for the kind thoughts, I guess you could say.
Yes, that was very nice.
I don't know.
You know, it's kind of weird when people pass away. That number gets recycled into new people. You know, the new people that are born get the new Social Security.
Oh, really? Yeah. Don't they take some time off?
They do. They do give some time off, but over time it does. But some numbers don't get recycled. I think it's like 50 years. I'm not sure. I have to look it up. I don't want to quote it. But I've had to use for genealogy research, and Social Security numbers come sometimes in handy when you're trying to research somebody. That's only if they're, you know, from the United States. On my father's side, they are not. They're not from the United States. They came from Europe. So, but it's interesting how that stuff works, you know? One number like that could ruin you, you know?
Yeah, it's a crazy world out there. That's what we ought to talk about, the crazy world.
Yeah. It is a crazy world, man.
Hey, did I tell you we got a new sponsor?
Who's that?
BillsFirewood.com.
There we go.
It's our first commercial. Well, after we get done with the drum section here, we'll do a little commercial.
Yeah, okay. We'll do a little commercial.
Yeah, and thank BillsFirewood.com company or whatever it is officially.
Yeah.
I think the way things are going, well, like England and Europe and that, the energy crisis they got going on, and it's just getting started. They're running out of electricity. I mean, they have brownouts all the time.
Yeah.
The cars, they don't have enough gasoline for their cars, and the prices are going crazy.
You know, the thing is neither you or I have brownouts.
If the electricity goes off, I don't even know it.
You know, there's something about being independent, you know, from the power grid is extremely helpful.
You don't know. People don't know what it's like because nobody's independent of the grid, you know.
You
can't tell you. It's so. I don't need anything.
Normally I don't think about those kind of things because I'm so just used to it, but. You know, you remember when the tornado went through the town and...
people got mad at me because I was the only one with electricity.
Right.
I mean, they thought I was showing off. I wasn't showing off. I was just talking on Facebook. I don't know. You just don't think about it until it happens.
It took a week for it to come back, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
It was a long time. Yeah. And, I had a few connections at Penelec, and I had to call them and tell them, you know, I say, hey, you know, it's been off for days now, and nobody showed up yet.
Right.
It wasn't next day. There was a whole truckload a whole train load of Penelec trucks headed for Union City. Not because of me, but I'm sure they would have been there anyways. But
it took them a while.
Yeah. So, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, we can come back after this song and talk a little bit, and then go from there.
All right. Well, these guys almost done?
Yeah, they're almost done.
All right. Well, let's let them finish, and we'll be back in a jiffy. Oh, this is the Real BS Show. Seth, I told you we had a commercial.
Yeah.
Our first commercial.
It's the first commercial ever.
Right. As you can tell by the background, if you're chilly, get a little closer. It's the sound of a fire. And our first official sponsor is BillsFirewood.com. Home delivery, well, pickup or delivery, but everybody wants delivery, so... deliver a face cord, a half a cord, three cords, whatever you want.
And Bill's Firewood has the hardwood.
Yeah, it's all hardwood.
Not softwood.
It's all seasons. Cut down probably 3 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago. Cut, split, and stacked, and dries for another year and a half. So it's dry.
And it's harvested ethically. You know, it's not like, you know.
Yeah, it's the tops of these really big trees that the sawmills take. The saw lumber. So they just leave the tops laying there. So along comes Bill and his Ferguson and pulls them out of the woods, cuts them up and stacks them up, covers them up, and a year and a half later delivers them. So it's not a giant outfit. It's just a, well, one-man operation, really. One man and a couple grandkids.
There you go. There you go.
Now, so, anyways, just look it up on the web.
BillsFirewood.com, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and it's all there. You want phone numbers and addresses and all that stuff, email addresses. And there's some pictures, lots of pictures.
Do you ever just stare at the fire while it's going on?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Sure. Then I fall asleep. Yeah. Don't take much to fall asleep.
There's something ancient about that, isn't that? You know, just staring at a fire. And
I wonder who invented fire.
Yeah, one crazy ape. That's probably what I would say, just one crazy ape.
Probably lightning, huh?
Yeah, lightning, but, you know, to actually, like, control fire, that's something serious, seriously different. There's some birds that do it. Once in a while, they'll start a fire. They'll take a something that's struck by lightning and carry a branch to another place to... route out.
Set the whole county on fire.
Yeah, yeah. They do that to, like, chase out rabbits and rodents and things like that. But at the end of the day, humans controlling fires kind of set us off to a change.
Yeah, look what it's done. It's created a web and took us to the moon.
It kept us safe. It kept us, you know.
It kept us fighting with each other, yeah, too.
But you think about it, you know, we're the only species that cook. And fire gave us the opportunity for that, so much that,
well, that
we
way we could eat other species.
Yeah, our stomach, our intestines, and our digestive system just shrank because we can't eat raw food anymore. But fire gave us that potential to get more calories out of the food. And if you don't believe it's more calories, you can Google it. There's more calories out of cooked food than raw.
Well, I don't
raw.
Believe anything Google tells me.
Yeah. Okay, DuckDuckGo. There you go. Use DuckDuckGo. But... you know, hey, firewood, man, you know, you can't mess with it. It's good.
Yeah, people call about firewood, and I said, just give me your address, Google, show me where you live. Google will get me there.
Send your social credit score, too.
Yeah.
But you got some firewood, man, and that's a good thing, you know? It's keeping you out in the sun, and it's keeping you, you know, fresh air and nature.
Yeah, keeping me young. So with that, let's just... let's listen to some fire, and then we'll get into, you know, world events or whatever, the earth falling apart, and we'll catch you in a few minutes. That's the Bill and Seth Show.
The BS Show.
Well, yeah. Oh, that's right. The Real BS Show.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Doug Casey, from Uruguay and sometimes Argentina, he's pretty intelligent and way ahead of schedule.
Right.
And... a matter of fact, he left the United States. He has some property in Virginia, but
right.
He comes back once in a while. But listened to him. He was interviewed, and the stuff he said and the questions he was asked was really relevant for what's happening right now.
Right.
And with the energy crisis and the financial crisis, there's so many crises. You know, there's a crisis everywhere you look. And he kind of put a nice spin on everything and makes it a lot more easier to understand.
Right.
So let's listen to Doug Casey, and then when he's done, we'll come back and, I don't know, lock things up and
turn the lights off.
Yeah, head for the campfire.
There you go.
I believe that in the future, gold, and to a lesser degree silver, which is mainly an industrial metal, will again be used as day-to-day money. You can't trust politicians and bureaucrats with your money, for God's sake. Good. I'm speaking to you right now from the backward but peaceful little welfare state of Uruguay.
Okay. How are things in Uruguay?
Well, this is a very quiet country. It's only got 3.5 million people. You can describe it as basically Kansas on the seacoast with something like Atlantic City, which seasonally pops up. That's to say Punta del Este. That's what I'm near. I'm in the middle of a large farm. I've been living in Uruguay about half of the year for many years, in between here and Argentina. But it's a nice place to be. It is. But we have the same problems as the world does. For instance, in particular, this COVID hysteria, which has swept the world. It's turned from a hysteria into a psychosis, actually.
Okay, I'm sure we'll touch on those things as we move forward. Doug, in a late September International Man communique, it was stated that a tenet of capitalism is that if it's let alone, it'll sort itself out and will serve virtually everyone well. Conversely, every effort to make the free market less free diminishes the very existence of capitalism, making it less able to function. Are the U.S. government and their own central bank diminishing the existence of capitalism?
Well, what we have in the United States is an actual Bolshevik government. Now, people might say, that's ridiculous. The Bolsheviks don't exist anymore. But the fact is that the people in the Biden administration share the psychology and the philosophy and the values of the Bolsheviks that took over Russia in 1917. For that matter, they're identical psychologically and philosophically and worldview-wise to the Jacobins during the French Revolution in 1789. So it's a very serious situation we're looking at now. And these people, once they have control of the apparatus of the state, are not going to let go easily. And in the United States, the people that are in red counties and blue counties, they actually hate each other at this point. They can't even talk to each other. So it's not a good situation at all. It's a dangerous situation.
Yeah, Doug, do you think they're doing this intentionally, or are they really trying to resolve economic and political problems?
Well, look, these people with a statist and a collectivist bent, they think that the free market itself is a problem. They think that they know better than the mass of people who buy and sell and trade with each other. Look, you got two kinds of people in the world. You've got people that like to allow freedom and allow freedom and create things and manipulate things in the physical universe. I like those kind of people. Then you've got the kind of people that basically are interested in manipulating and controlling other people. Now, inevitably, that type of person always goes into politics, whether it's Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative. Those people that like to manipulate other people go into politics. But the people that we have in Washington right now think that they know better than the market. So they want to enforce their opinions on everybody else.
Yeah, with what you just said, I think you had mentioned that also in a September International Man communique. But Doug, how did we get to this point in history where politicians, they no longer serve, but they instead rule?
Well, as I said, people that get into government, they're professional busybodies. They think that they know what's best for everybody else. And the problem is the world has become very politicized it's been increasing over decades, but the trouble is people have become very, very politicized. And that means that they look to the government to solve solutions, not to themselves, not to their neighbors, their friends, their families. But they think that the government is a kind of a magic cornucopia and that these people in the government actually know what they're doing. But they don't. As I said, the people that get into government today, more than ever before, are the kind of people that create wars, pogroms, persecutions, runaway inflations, economic disasters of all type. And I'm afraid in Washington, these people actually control things now, and increasingly all over the world. In Australia, for instance, the place is locked down as if it was Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia or Mao's China. It's almost as bad in New Zealand, almost as bad in Canada, where these people can't even leave their country. Forget about nobody is able to come into those countries. They can't even leave. But nobody's talking about it or complaining about it in the news. They accept it. People are doing what they're told. It augurs very, very poorly for the future.
Yeah, I think we're getting a taste of how far governments may go. But in your opinion, Doug, do you think they will go even further to control the populace?
Yes, of course. There's no limit to what these people will do unless you resist them. They actually think they know best. So what I urge people to do is, insofar as they can, depending on their station in life and what they do for a living, is resist these things. They tell you to wear a mask, don't wear a mask. They tell you to get vaccinated, don't get vaccinated. They tell you to maintain a curfew, don't maintain it. I mean, you can't feed power to these people by listening to them. Now, I understand how dangerous that is. And it's easy for me to say, in the middle of a large farm in Uruguay, where nobody's about to assault my door with a SWAT team. It's different if you live in a large city like Singapore or Hong Kong. But they can't put everybody in jail. So we either hang together or we're going to hang separately. And what you've got to do is resist the machine as best you can.
Yeah, that was a great quote from Benjamin Franklin, I believe it was. But Doug, is freedom dead, or has freedom been uprooted and perhaps even looking for a new home or another nation or generation that wants it?
Yeah, well, I wish I could find the home where freedom would like to live. But frankly, all of the countries in the world are heading in the same direction. The state is more powerful in all the countries in the world, and the state is completely hooked up with large corporations today, hand in glove, and with most of the media. So physically, I'm not sure where you can go to live a free life where you're not bothered by these horrible people that want to control every aspect of your life. Although right now, the aspect that they're centering on is the medical aspect, and they're using that as a lever to control everything else. Very effective lever, incidentally. Is the next generation going to be better? Look, I hate to decry the younger generation. Older generations always think the younger generations are weaker and lazier and not as intelligent. That's been true since Plato wrote that in the Republic 2,400 years ago. But the fact of the matter is that schools have turned into indoctrination camps. And kids that are in the millennial generation today have been subjected from grade school up to the bad ideas that their indoctrinated teachers have crammed down their throats. And St. Ignatius Loyola, who founded the Jesuits, and Lenin, who founded the Soviet Union, both agreed that if you give them a young person, that they will mold their mind and indoctrinate them and change the course of their life from that point forward. And schools are no longer places where you go to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. They're places where you go to be indoctrinated. So do I think things are going to get better physically or generationally? I'm afraid I'm pessimistic.
Yeah, it's a straight answer there. Doug, you've also recently said that the U.S. is headed into its fourth turning. And the term fourth turning has to do with the nature of generations. Somewhat like saying hard times create strong men create good times create weak men, and weak men create hard times. Are hard times ahead? I mean, I know we just touched on this. And which generation will be called to tackle the coming crisis and conflicts?
Well, what you're referring to, of course, is Strauss and Howe's book, Generations, great book, came out in the 90s, followed up by The Fourth Turning, where they amplified the theme that they put forward. And in those books, they don't see a pendulum going back and forth from liberal to conservative, from freedom to control. They see kind of a four-part pendulum, based on what you just said, actually. So what they see, it's a generational theory of history, actually. Each generation lasting about 20 years. So what they see is that right now we're in what they call a fourth turning, which means tough times, economic disaster, war, all kinds of terrible things like that. And I agree with Strauss and Howe, except I'm afraid that because the last several generations have been so thoroughly imbued and indoctrinated with Marxist and collectivist ideas, I'm pessimistic. And of course, there are a lot of people that are more pessimistic than I am. There are some who believe, with some reason, that this COVID hysteria, which has visited itself upon the world, is actually an opening round of World War III. I'm of the opinion that World War III, when it happens, and it will, it's not going to resemble, it's going to have nothing to do with F-22s and Ford-class carriers and submarines, none of that. That's all junk. It's junk in the same sense as battleships were junk before World War II and cavalry was junk before World War I. The nature of war is going to change. So the war that's coming is going to have two main aspects, I think. One, it's going to be a cyber war because the entire world runs on computers these days. And they're not so hard to hack. And if you bring down the computers of a country, you bring down everything, the utilities, electricity, the banking system, shipping, everything. Number one. Number two, it's going to have biological aspects. And it's been asserted that this COVID hysteria is kind of a test case. Maybe the next virus will be even more serious because you'll recall there are people like Ted Turner and Bill Gates that have said on numerous occasions that the world would be better off with just a few hundred million people, carefully chosen, of course. So, yeah, we're looking at some very interesting times coming up, I think.
Yeah, interesting for sure. It's interesting how you mentioned the next war probably will be in the cyber arena. If that should be the case, what happens, let's say, if we have already moved over into a fully digital type of a monetary system with no more paper currency, but just digital currencies?
Well, that's going to be a complete disaster for the people that have digitized their lives. Bitcoin, for instance, has been very, very good to me. And it serves a useful purpose. But the problem is that governments are trying to go to digital currencies run by the state. And if the government, if you're using a government's digital currency, it's bad enough using a government's paper currency, which is being inflated out of existence as we speak, as all these governments are creating trillions of new currency units. Paper currency is bad enough, but when governments go to a government digital currency, it means that they'll have complete control. They'll know exactly what you're buying, how much, when. They'll be able to debit or credit, is what they'll emphasize, your bank account at will. It'll be a complete loss of freedom. So, sure. I mean, I use Bitcoin, the digital currency. That's one thing, but that's a private currency, which is limited in amount and is not controlled by the government. It has dangers because it is digital. And if we have a cyber war, it's not going to be good for anything that runs on computers, including Bitcoin. So while I do that, I have a lot of physical gold. I have a lot of physical silver, both.
Yeah, we'll touch on that also in just a bit. But as for today's economy, David Stockman wrote in an article, again, in your International Man Communique titled "The Banking Ponzi Scheme That's Savaging Depositors." He noted that accelerating inflation supposedly portends higher growth and loan demand, but that's a complete humbug because what we actually see in the market is stagflation. Doug, between hyperinflation, stagflation, perhaps disinflation, deflation, which do you see and why?
All of them are possible today. All of them are possible today. The monetary world today is extremely unstable. We're overburdened by debt. The central banks are printing up new currency units by the trillions, and most of that money inevitably goes to big corporations and the rich. Little guy just gets table scraps that fall off the monetary table. So what are we headed towards? At this point, I think we're headed towards hyperinflation. Will it be as bad as places like Zimbabwe or Argentina, both of which I've spent a lot of time in? I kind of doubt that because those are small and insignificant economies. But I think in the next couple of years, we're going to see inflation on a retail level. Right now, most of that money has gone into the financial markets, the stock market, the bond markets in a hyperbubble, real estate, which rests on a platform of debt, has been booming as a result. But I think in the next few years, that inflation is going to start filtering down to the retail grocery store. I mean, I think in the U.S., although the U.S. government is reporting about 5% inflation right now, 4 or 5%, I think those are completely phony numbers. I'd say that actual retail inflation in the U.S. is well over 10%, well over 10%. And it's going to 20%. It's going to be absolutely shocking. And this is true in most places in the world. So, Answer to the question, deflation is possible because in a world where we have so much debt, if that debt is defaulted on, say a $1 billion bond is not paid, well, that $1 billion goes poof. That's deflationary. But that's the last thing that the powers that be want to have happen. So let's say we're going to have stagflation, Look, it's going to be worse than that. We're headed into, or we're in the early stages of what I call the Greater Depression. It's a period of time when most people's standard of living is going to drop significantly. Now, that's an economic thing, a depression. A monetary thing, inflation, deflation, it's going to be a depression accompanied by much higher levels of inflation. So this is a bad combination.
Yeah, I completely agree. Standard of living, and what may add further to a drop in standard of living to not just the U.S., but to also global economic hurdles that we're going to see is what's happening in China with the energy crisis in the U.K. with natural gas and a fuel delivery crisis and within the U.S. as well. How severe and far-reaching will this energy shortage reach, in your opinion?
Well, the greenies, the people that are educating our children, and everybody, this is like a worldwide meme, have been saying, we want to decarbonize the world. This is another nonsense, quite frankly. They turn carbon, the basis of all life, into an enemy element. Like it's more dangerous than plutonium in these people's opinion. And one consequence of that is they're trying to wean the world of fossil fuels. Now, in principle, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I mean, the amount of oil and gas and coal are limited in the world, of course. But the market would take care of these things. Look, if we lived in a free market where government bureaucrats weren't running and deciding things, we would be running on nuclear power and not the primitive second generation plants, which are all over the world. We'd be running on small, highly efficient 50 megawatt plants, and nuclear power would be extremely cheap. But, you know, government has quashed progress in nuclear. So, yeah, we're still using coal and oil and so forth. But they're trying to get rid of that. Like Exxon and Shell and BP, all of them have said that they're getting out of the fossil fuel business. And in fact, they are. They're not drilling. Their reserves are going down. We're going to have shortages. I think we're going to see oil well above $100 an ounce within the next year. $100 a barrel, excuse me. And there will be shortages of it because they're just not drilling. Most of the oil in the world is going to start coming from OPEC again. And it's a serious situation. We're going to have real energy shortages is what I'm boiling this down to.
Okay, yeah, because some people are very concerned that an energy crisis could potentially trigger a resource war leading to a currency war or even a hot war. Should we be concerned about this?
Yeah, we should be concerned about it because you can't draw the analogy with today in World War II too far, but you'll recall that the reason the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941 was because Roosevelt cut off their oil supply. Almost all the oil that the Japanese were burning at that time came from the United States. So it seemed to the Japanese that they had almost no alternative but to attack at that point, not to excuse the attack, but still, they were provoked. Could this happen again today with different countries? Yeah, it could. The solution to this is the free market. The price of oil should, you know, different countries, different companies should be able to trade, and the price should fluctuate according to supply and demand. But this is being politicized, where one government puts another under embargo and so forth. And you back people into a corner, and they'll do desperate things. It's like the U.S. is trying to still after decades still trying to foment a war with Iran, making life in that country impossible. Because the main thing that they produce is oil. Look, anything could happen. You could have a revolution in Saudi Arabia really easily from a number of different points of view. A major source of oil would be cut off. This is a weak link in the world's economy. I'd love to see the world go to solar power and wind power. And the price of solar power has dropped about 90% in the last decade. So there's a future for it. But the problem with solar and wind is that they're not reliable. Sometimes the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow. Yes, batteries can solve this, but that's a whole other problem. Look, the only ultimate solution to this is technology. I have no doubt that we'll solve the fusion problem in the future, and that fusion will obviate all of the current forms of power. It'll happen eventually.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how you mentioned the oil could have been the cause for World War II or Japan choosing to do what it did. And I can hear our viewers screaming in my ears, is the petrodollar the possible reason for something that is now backing countries into a corner where they want to get off the petrodollar and war might be an option as well?
Well, I think everybody wants to get off of the dollar. The dollar has become the world's currency. It's the official currency, not just in the United States, but in Panama and several other countries. Liberia, minor countries. But it's the de facto currency, the unofficial currency in about 50 countries around the world. They don't use their local pulas and kwachas and dirhams and, you know, junk currencies like that, except for small things within these countries, these third world countries. They use dollars. So, but the world wants to get off of the dollars. You know, most people are unaware of the fact that the major export of the U.S. Isn't wheat or corn or Boeings or computers. The main export of the U.S. is dollars. And right now, the number of dollars being shipped out of the U.S. is greater than at any time in history. The U.S. is now running a deficit, a trade deficit of about $850 billion per year. In other words, we ship out dollars, and those nice Germans ship in Mercedes, and the nice Japanese ship in Sonys, and they get dollars. The trouble is, there are how many? Maybe 20 trillion U.S. dollars, I'm guessing. Nobody knows, outside the U.S. And at some point, when the dollar starts losing value radically, and obviously, they're going to want to get rid of those dollars. They're going to be hot potatoes. And at that point, the only place that will take them by law is the United States. Those dollars will be repatriated to the U.S. Prices will skyrocket. And things will panic and fall apart. That's one scenario. So, you don't want to have a significant part of your wealth in dollars. At this point, there are better places than the currency. And I believe that in the future, just because it's logical, gold, and to a lesser degree silver, which is mainly an industrial metal at this point, will again be used as day-to-day money, maybe in digital form, but there'll be money again. You can't trust politicians and bureaucrats with your money, for God's sake.
Yeah, a lot of our viewers agree with that as well. They're looking at gold and silver. And one question we always get from a viewer, in fact, Craig A., he wants to know why you think silver seems to be having such a hard time at that $30 level. Now, I know you're not a technical analyst or anything like that, but in your opinion, why do you think silver seems to be having such a hard time getting to that 30 level and going above it?
Yeah, well, silver and gold are two very, very different markets. All the gold that's ever been mined in history is basically still above ground in vaults or in readily accessible jewelry. It's not true with silver. Most of it's consumed in one way or another. There's not large stores of silver that are on the market waiting to be released. Governments don't own silver anymore. Almost all the governments in the world have sold almost all the silver they have. They used to have a lot. So you'd think that based upon that, and based upon the fact that silver is a high-tech metal, new uses are discovered for it almost every day. After all, silver is the most is the most reflective and the most conductive of all metals. It has lots of high-tech uses. So, frankly, at this point, I'm surprised with silver. As we speak, it's about $23, 22 and a half, something like that. Incidentally, I'm long silver in the futures market, for what it's worth. I think there's more upside potential in silver than there is in gold at this point. Seems to me that as much as I like gold, that it's at a reasonable level compared to other commodities, compared to other things. Silver, I think, has a lot more upside. To answer the question, why is it stuck at around $30? Good question. Well, let me put it this way. In today's world, almost everything seems to be overpriced. Now, that's metaphysically impossible for everything to be overpriced. But commodities are the cheapest thing in the world at this point, even though they've come up a lot in the last year. I think the next bubble to be ignited by all this money printing is going to be in commodities in general, and certain commodities, silver among them in particular. So don't worry about the fact that silver's been struggling. I'm bullish. Silver is cheap. It actually is cheap relative to everything else in the world. I don't know if that's a direct answer. It's kind of a rambling answer. I guess there's no precise answer, no definitive answer. The market determines what something's worth, but I'm long silver. I like silver more than gold as a speculation.
Okay, no, that's a good answer. It's a good, honest answer there. Doug, you've stated before that the creation of new wealth is the only functional weapon against poverty. How do the viewers out there obtain new wealth?
Well, the key is, as an individual, you have to produce more than you consume. It's really that simple. You produce by finding goods and services that you can supply to the market. Hey, there's 7 billion other people in the world, and I promise you, all of them want lots of stuff. So the demand is infinite. It's up to you as an individual, no matter where you are or what you do, to figure out, what can I give these other people so they'll give me something in return? So that's the first key. It's to find out what you can produce. And if you can't provide goods and services right now, we'll figure out how you can do it. You've got to educate yourself. Then after you produce, you have to make sure you produce more than you consume. Cut your spending down. Don't be in debt. And the difference, savings, is capital. And that's how you become wealthy. I mean, that sounds very simple, but believe me, it's profound. And if people started thinking that way, it would solve a lot of their personal problems, as well as a lot of the world's economic problems. Produce more than you consume and save the difference. Question is, how do you save the difference? Most people save the difference in their national currency. And today, that's a mistake. I think they should save the difference in the precious metals, quite frankly. And after their savings build up enough, then you can invest and speculate.
Yeah, gold and silver, the stores of wealth. I had one question from a viewer. He's baffled, like a lot of us out here. And he wanted to ask you, besides yourself, are there any good guys out there right now who we can follow? Is there any hope left?
Okay. I'm a libertarian, which means I believe in free minds and free markets, and I don't believe in initiating the use of force. So who else in the investment world thinks that way? Well, you're not going to find anybody at BlackRock or Goldman Sachs that thinks that way. So it comes down to relatively small investment newsletters. I'll give you some names. People can look them up on the internet. A friend of mine for many years has been Rick Mayberry, M-A-Y-B-U-R-Y. He's great. When it comes to specific stock picks, not his economic views so much. My friend Marin Katusa is very good. My friend Adrian Day is very good. My friend E.B. Tucker, who just wrote a book called Why Gold, Why Now, is very good. So these are some of the names that I've mentioned. People can Google them. There are other people out there, but frankly, we're a small minority. We're not even a rounding error when it comes to, the blogosphere, the blow-dried talking heads on television. They're all talking conventional Keynesian nonsense. So, people can subscribe to internationalman.com. We have some very good writers there, David Stockman among them.
One last question here, though. Doug, how do you stay positive? How do you stay focused with all that's going on?
Well, I control my own reality, and I have to listen to the news, which is almost unremittingly bad. It's just about what governments are doing. New laws are making, new taxes are passing, more money they're printing. So I have to know what's going on, or what other people think is going on. Anyway, that's a more accurate way of describing the news. It's not reality, it's perceived reality. But I live in my own world. I control my own reality. And that allows me to stay optimistic, maybe not about the world in general, but about my situation in particular. And to all of us, it's our own situation in particular that's number one, then our family, then our friends, and so forth. And what happens in the broad world with all those chimpanzees out there, hey, that's their problem. I'm worried about me and my family and my friends and my business associates first. And I try to help them all do well, help myself do well. So that's how I stay optimistic, by looking out for number one first. I expect, Vincent, that in the next 6 months, the world may change dramatically. It's hard to tell which direction because it's such a chaotic situation.
Why 6 months? Is it because of getting close to midterms or anything like that?
That's part of it. Certainly, I probably should have picked a year, because if you're going to make a prediction, it's best to give yourself as long a time frame as possible for that to happen. It's because we're going into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, and the winter is the flu season. And they seem to be building this COVID thing up to a crescendo. So I expect it'll peak one way or another in the next 6 months. But give me a year, and I'm sure we'll look back at this moment as we speak, and we'll see, boy, that was pretty mellow back then. Things are a lot less mellow now. 6 months, probably. A year, certainly.
Before we wrap up, if you could let our listeners know more about what you're up to, where they can find your work, and of course, your books.
Yeah. Well, I came to the conclusion that there are a lot of things that you can say in fiction that you'd best not say in nonfiction. It gives you a broader palette on which to paint. And a good novel is fun to read while it can be educational. So I started writing with my co-author, John Hunt, a series of novels. speculator is perhaps where people want to start, because it's got a lot of economic basis. It's about a bush war in Africa, incidentally. I'm quite knowledgeable about Africa, and it's an exciting thing where our hero, who's only 23, goes to Africa because he gets lucky on a mining stock and he wants to find out what's there. So we talk a lot about theory of speculation and all that that makes our hero quite wealthy. Then the second novel is called Drug Lord. That's become topical again because drugs are very much in the news with the vaccines and all this type of thing. And then the third book we came out with last year is Assassin, where our hero decides there are some people that just need killing. It's like excising a cancer from the body politic. You can't say that kind of thing in a nonfiction book, but you can in a novel, and it's a hell of a good novel. So the novels get more radical from here. I don't want people to fall behind. Next year, we'll be out with a new novel called Terrorist, where our hero, Charles, is accused of being a terrorist. I've got lots of views on terrorism as a method of warfare and so forth. But so if you want to read more stuff by me, go to internationalman.com and go to Amazon, where those books are available. And also, I have a podcast, which is a couple times a week, called Doug Casey's Take on YouTube. So if people want to hear more opinions about this type of thing, go there too.
And we'd like to thank BillsFirewood.com for all your firewood, fireplace, and wood stove needs.
He's keeping Americans warm.
Yeah, well, when the power goes off, you're going to be glad you got a wood stove. Yeah. So, well, this is the Real BS Show, so I don't know. I guess we've done enough damage today, haven't we?
A little bit, yeah, just enough, yeah.
People are falling asleep probably already. So, I want to thank our faithful listener for the heads up. And, I got to tell you about my Bitcoin necklace that I built.
There you go. Go on.
I had all this Bitcoin a long time ago, and it was like $200 a Bitcoin. Now
right.
It's 65,000, whatever. But I made a Bitcoin necklace, and I tried to show it to everybody, and nobody could see it. Everybody said, "What necklace?" Isn't it the necklace? I made a necklace out of Bitcoin.
Right.
Nobody could see it. So I threw it away. So that was the end of Bitcoin for me. I don't have any Bitcoin. It went up to 7,000 and I cashed in and spent it all.
It's a rough one because, you know, it is kind of speculatory right now, but you know, there's some good ways that people could use Bitcoin in the future if we use it as a currency.
Well, they're trying to, it's kind of like gold and silver, you know,
right.
The government can't print it, you know.
Right.
And there's a finite amount of Bitcoin, and that's it. Once it's 21 million Bitcoins, there will be no more.
Right.
You know, so what's there is there, and it'll probably go up even more then.
Right.
If the government hasn't squashed their fire, you know.
Right.
So anyways, we'd like to say good night and enjoy the fire.